This is episode 4 of the Transformation Chamber with special guest, real estate developer and entrepreneur, Chris Senegal. In this episode, we discuss building generational wealth, eliminating excuses, and the real on real estate. With that being said, let's step into the Transformation Chamber. Welcome back to episode 4 of the Transformation Chamber. I'm super excited about this episode. I have one of my great friends here, Chris Senegal, man. So a little bit about Chris. Chris is an entrepreneur, master entrepreneur. That's what I like to call him. Real estate developer and an economic influencer. That's hard to say real fast. An economic influencer. Man, first of all, just welcome to the show, Chris. What's up, brother?
Man, I appreciate you having me on the show, man. I'm looking forward to some great dialogue. I saw your previous episodes, bro. You're killing it.
I love
the movement.
I'm glad
to be a part of it.
Yeah, man. The Transformation Chamber. It was a gift gave to me, and I was like, I got to use it to give to other people. And I know you're full of insight, knowledge, and just empowerment for people. So I'm happy that you were able to come on.
I'm humbled by that. That was beautiful.
So, Chris, let's tell people a little bit about you, you know, where you come from. And I know that you're doing real estate and it's happening in a major way. And in fact, you just went viral today, which is crazy. And we'll talk about that. But kind of tell us the story of how you got here.
Yeah, man. All right. So I was born in Lake Charles, Louisiana, lived half my life in Port Arthur, Texas. You know, my parents were divorced when I was 5. I was a teenage dad, had my son when I was 16. You know?
Wow.
Middle school, I got kicked out of school, actually, for selling alcohol.
Wow.
Only sibling to actually graduate high school. My sisters did get GEDs, but only one. My brother's been incarcerated since he was 15, you know? So, you know, I had every reason to make an excuse.
Yeah, I didn't know all this.
Yeah, yeah, I had every reason to make an excuse. But for me, man, I always had this drive in me, this ambition. So, yeah, I did the whole college thing, went to school on full scholarship.
What school did you go to?
Southern University.
Okay.
Baton Rouge, yeah. Full engineering scholarship, man. Graduated, got out there in the workforce. And that first year, bro, I felt like I was sold a dream. Man, you know, watching my boss's boss, they making six figures, but they miserable.
Yeah.
Working long hours. I started calculating it. And I was like, man, these union guys actually making more money than us.
Mm.
So that's when the first light bulb went off. Was like, you know, this salary thing, just graduating, being able to buy a house at 22, all the stuff I thought was cool. I was like, man, I'm in a trap.
Yep.
I gotta get out.
Yep. Yep.
I gotta get out.
It's a hamster wheel. You just running around.
Hamster wheel, yeah. Bro. The hamster wheel.
Man, let's back up a little bit, man, because I've known you now for I think about 2 years, maybe a little bit more than that, uh-huh. Maybe closer to 3 years, but I didn't know all that you just said, like you got kicked out of middle school.
Yeah.
You're the only sibling to graduate high school.
Yeah.
Like usually when you hear that, it's like I'm the only one to go to college, but not the only one to graduate high school.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, all three of my sisters did go back and get GEDs. To
get their GEDs, which is great, you know. Right. But man, can you paint the picture of, you know, maybe what the landscape of your life was at that time?
You know what? It really wasn't nothing. I mean, bad, you know, I think people think because you grew up in the same household, all the kids gonna come out the same.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody just took their own path. Now they're all doing well now.
Okay.
They're all in the medical profession, like medical assistants and LPNs and those type of jobs.
Sure.
Yeah. So I mean, they're doing well.
You but know, you decided to go on to college. You got an electrical engineer,
civil engineering degree. Yeah,
that's awesome. But you had a kid at 16.
Yeah.
So this drive that you talk about, was it something that you think was innately there, or did it turn on perhaps when you had your kid on the way? Or I know that changes a man a lot.
Yeah, I think that definitely was a boost.
Mm-hmm.
When I was 14, I got my first job. I was cleaning cemeteries before I went to school in the morning.
Oh,
okay. Like going in the mausoleum, sweeping the mausoleum from my sister's godfather. I think I always had hustle.
That's crazy. You
know? Yeah, but I think having a kid really turned it up.
And like, what was your mindset at 16? Like, I can't imagine. I had my first kid at 25 and I was spooked.
Bro, I mean, it was a big awakening, you know what I mean? It's like I'm no longer a kid. Like,
yeah,
I'm literally. Matter of fact, also I was the youngest shift manager and hiring manager at Taco Bell at 16. You know what I mean? Because they saw that much drive in me. So I'm sitting there hiring my friends.
Wow.
And like Friday nights when everybody's going to football games, I'm working.
So you've been putting on for the community, for the homies.
Apparently, yeah.
That's what's up. All right, man. So let's get into what we're here to talk about today. Just transformation, and I think we already kind of got a little insight to maybe some of the things that help you transform. But, you know, looking at listening to what you just told us about your past and looking at where you are now. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, you literally just went viral today for buying the block in Fifth Ward. Can you tell us a little bit about that project for those who don't know? And I'm excited about it because I'm actually invested in it a little bit as well. So tell us a little bit about that initiative and anything else you have going on.
All right. So to sum up that project is the blueprint for what can be done in our communities where we don't have to be mad at Oprah anymore. We don't have to be mad at LeBron about not coming and saving the neighborhood.
Right.
You know, the whole focus of this is we can crowdfund. We can collectively pool money together and buy big blocks of property, rental properties, commercial properties, and we can collectively own them. We can renovate them. We can protect the tenants that are there by not increasing their rents. And then we can increase the return on a project by bringing the commercial back to life and bringing businesses back and bringing traffic back, bringing everything back.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be a millionaire. You don't have to have a college degree. You can just crowdfund, jump in with you and crowdfund the project, which is kind of what I did. I bought a few shares in it.
Yeah.
What does that mean for just an individual who buys shares in this project? Like, what does that mean for them? How do they?
So it is no different than owning shares of stock, right? Mm-hmm. So you own a small portion of the company. You get a certificate that says, you know, that your ownership is this, right? And so for everybody that owns shares, they actually own a piece of the real estate. So as the property value goes up, their share value goes up.
Mm.
As the rental revenue goes up and the rents have more profits, that goes out as dividends.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. So just looking at, you have this, it's like you're known for, I would say rather, let's take care of us, right? Like like you said, not looking for a savior, always complaining or looking for a government handout. Yeah, you're like, let's take care of us. And and I think I've heard you say this, correct me if I'm wrong. If it's going to be gentrified, it might as well be gentrified by us.
Right. I mean, you got to think about it like this. Everything has a life cycle, including a neighborhood. And for some reason, we have this mentality for the most part where it's like, let's leave them alone. Let's protect them. Let's only build low income housing in those neighborhoods.
Mm.
But we forgot about the fact that before desegregation, we all lived in those neighborhoods. The doctors, the lawyers, everybody lived
there.
So you got to bring that back to life.
Absolutely.
And if we ever want the grocery stores and all that stuff to go back, the grocery stores are going to look at the incomes of those low income people and be like, nah. There's no profitability there.
Absolutely.
So we got to bring the high income people back to the neighborhood so that it becomes a complete community.
No, so I actually live in one of those historic neighborhoods right now, Third Ward.
Yeah.
And I know you're building over in Fifth Ward.
Fifth Ward, right.
Right. And I mean, when you, even Third Ward is still predominantly like entrepreneurs and self-ran businesses, self-owned businesses. But it's not like it used to be in the past from what I used to, from what I hear.
Yeah, right.
I hear it used to be, like you said, they had their own dentist. Their own vet, their own, everything was in the community. The dollar circulated right there in that community.
Yeah.
And so you're building in Fifth Ward. What's that like to be building in the historic Fifth Ward?
Man, I love it. I mean, it's bringing back the stories that aren't told. The only thing we really talk about is Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That place got bombed. And that's a horrible narrative for us to perpetuate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every single city had a Black Wall Street. We had to. We couldn't go nowhere else. We couldn't go to a white bank.
Right.
We couldn't go to a white doctor.
Right.
You know, I mean, we had all that on our own, but it's just not talked about.
Wow.
So, so like the street that I'm on, the property that we're crowdfunding, like talking to some of the people that know about the history, they're telling me the same buildings that I'm renovating, Stevie Wonder's been in there, Tina Turner's been in there during segregation. You know, all the big acts, when they came to Houston and they were in Fifth Ward, everything was up and down that street right there.
That's beautiful, man. So it's a funny story. I stayed in Fifth Ward for a little bit.
Okay.
After, I think it was Hurricane Allison, something like that. The house that my family and I were living in got flooded and the molds were in the walls. So we had to move for a little bit. And a lot of people, and I'm just throw this out there at you. A lot of people see it as a tough community to build in.
Yeah.
I know that's changing a little bit now that with Houston becoming one of the most, or the most diverse city and people moving here. Why would someone... just to your narrative of telling people to stay home, why would someone want to move to Fifth Ward? And I'll tell you my experience.
Yeah.
It's a funny one, though. I laugh at it now. I moved over there just for like 3 or 4 months till we found our next location.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the first week of school. And I remember I went to school on the first day of school.
Yeah.
You know, back then you had to get your school clothes, get ready, iron them up, be ready for school.
Fresh.
You got to be fresh.
And stay flow.
Absolutely. Starchy.
They don't
archy.
Stand up on their own.
So I went to school. I went to Smiley High School, and I came back home after the first day of school, and somebody had broken in the house and stole all my school clothes. Like,
damn.
It was the. If you know anything about going to a black high school, you are what you wear.
Right, yeah.
So all my school clothes were stolen, and I was so mad. I had to wear white tees like for the next 2 weeks until I could. Get back. But I throw that out there to say there is a lot of rich history in Fifth Ward. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great history, but then there's also a lot of people might feel like, man, this is not the safe place to live. What do you say to that for people who should be investing or people you think that should be investing?
There's a turning point for a neighborhood. You know what I mean? Some areas are still war zones. I'm not advocating go to a war zone. What I advocate is if after something's been neglected for so long, usually an outside group comes in and they take over.
Mm-hmm.
And we're so dismissive of that neighborhood at that point that we don't even notice them coming in taking over, right? And so that's what Fifth Ward is right now. If you watched redevelopment in Houston, it started in the Heights and it went counterclockwise around downtown. Fifth Ward was the last quadrant that was not redeveloped. So when Third Ward started, there was still nothing going on in Fifth Ward, but I bought that property in 2013.
Wow.
Yeah, so something else you got to realize too is that we have been conditioned, despite it being our people, we are the most adverse to moving in when it's still kind of rough, right? If you think about it.
Right, we want it to be safe.
We want it to be safe.
Not, yeah.
The first question we asked was, is there still crime, mm-hmm. and what are the school districts like? Meanwhile, somebody else is moving the neighborhood, walking their dog down the street.
Man, listen, you should see Third Ward right now. It's hilarious.
Right. And so it gets to the point to where, like, we still call it Third Ward Hood, but now HEB done put a flagship store there.
Absolutely.
Right? And so now we're mad, right? So look at Third Ward, like, right around Alameda, $400,000 or $500,000 townhomes.
Yep.
Now that's kind of out of our price range. But imagine if we would have went in right before they started and said, we're going to build $250,000, $300,000 townhomes. Then when they start building their $400,000, $500,000 townhomes around us, all our property values goes up.
Interesting.
So that's my motto. It's like, don't wait till it looks nice. If it all looks nice, you missed the wave. You know, and the crime really isn't that bad. It's not as bad as people make it think.
Yeah, I mean, I can speak for the neighborhood I'm in. I've been over there for 2.5 years now, and I haven't had any issues. But there's crime everywhere. You know,
but there's crime in the Heights.
Exactly, they're perpetuated. So, and some, you know, some of my listeners not from Houston, they're like, "What are they talking about?" You know, but I'm sure in your city you have these same issues. Gentrification is something happening everywhere, like you said.
Right.
Things move in cycles.
Yeah.
So, you know, Chris is someone that is able to identify and then go after ahead of the curve, you know, so he can profit off of it.
Oh, let me touch on one more thing while we're on the subject. The school part. Houston has so many charter schools that are outperforming the public schools that should not even be a question for us. The African-American college acceptance rate and graduation rate from some of these charter schools like Yes Prep is way higher than the public school system. So we shouldn't even be worried about what the public school
is doing. Interesting fact. I didn't even know that. So how does that, how should that affect the way people look at moving to these neighborhoods? Are you insinuating that the charter schools are better? Like, if you're going to move into this neighborhood?
If that's your concern, if your concern is your kids and the education that they're getting, yes, put them in a charter school until the school system gets better. So it's a direct correlation. You have to have the higher value homes in there so that the county and the school board can collect higher property taxes to then fund the schools, right? So you gotta bring the rooftops there first. It's like a catch-22.
Okay.
Right. So it's a group of us that have to be the first in, raise the property values, increase the tax dollars that goes towards the school system, then the school gets better. You know?
That's awesome, man.
So it's two ways you can do that too. It could be the young professional that doesn't have kids yet. They could be that first wave and make it ready for the second wave. So, you know, when the kids come, you know, the schools are already better.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's all strategic.
No, I love it, man. You can tell he lives, breathe, and all you eat real estate. You know? Pulling off the curtain, like let's say we peel back the curtain and just look at the man, right? Mm-hmm. What is your purpose with real estate? What do you hope to accomplish ultimately?
Man, so my original purpose with real estate was to get out of corporate America and just, you know, build individual wealth. And then I started making money and people started asking me, can they invest with me? And I really couldn't find a fit for everybody, you know? And then I knew people that wanted to start flipping houses. I knew how risky it was. I knew how much time it'd take. And some people, I can charge you to teach you, But I know you're not going to be capable of doing it. This is not your lane. You're not going to be able to deal with the stress of it. So for me, it was like, how do I accomplish a bigger task? How do I impact more people? And that's when gentrification kept coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's more about now, it's about changing the narrative on our communities, because I know the things we talked about in the past, we act like it never happened. I know if we did it before, we can do it again.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's my passion right now. It's really just showing we can do it.
So to essentially try to rebuild Black Wall Street
and replicate, yeah, the complete communities that we had before.
Right. And it's not about going against other races. It's more so just about building up our own.
We are the only minority group that, for the most part, does not have any collective unity within our communities.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
all over Houston.
Yeah, I don't even like the all black everything narrative, because none of the other minorities that are successful do that. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay. You go to Chinatown, you know they got pride in their heritage.
Absolutely.
Everything's in Chinese.
Absolutely.
But they're very nice to you. It ain't no all Chinese everything. Hmm. You know, it ain't no, if you ain't Chinese, I ain't taking your money. You know, it's none of that. And I think that's where we have a misstep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. What do you attribute that to? Have you sat down and thought of that and say, you know, why is that?
I think our frustration got so channeled in proving a point. It's almost like we are like the adopted kid that doesn't want to focus on our own success. We want to focus on proving everybody wrong or making sure everybody accepts us like we were in the family.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I think that's it for a big part.
You feel like we're too busy trying to get into what you're doing, what you've built. And I watched something, I was watching a Hidden Colors documentary. Have you seen that documentary? Uh-huh. Really good. And I think they talked about that, like we constantly saying, help us or let us be a part of that. They're just like, nope. But you can bite this bone or you can, you know.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of people contributed to racism or prejudice. I don't even think the majority of it is that. It's just like kinds attract like kinds.
Absolutely.
You're not mad when you see a tiger trying to walk into a herd of lions, a pack of lions, and the lions don't accept them.
Hmm.
You just know they're not together. Now imagine if that tiger spent his whole life trying to hang out with the lions.
Trying to be a lion.
Instead of going and hanging out with the tigers.
Never can fulfill his full potential.
Exactly.
Never understand who he is. Can't even see his own beauty.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. And so, and that's what you're here to do your best to do. And how are you? I know you have Learn From Chris, which is a program or a platform that you created for people who want to know about real estate. Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little bit more to that?
Yeah. So I have so many people that reach out to me that want mentorship and they're like at square one. You know, for me, it's too time consuming. As much as I want to help every single person, I can't. So I created that platform so that people can go in there and kind of learn at their own pace. I have different levels. You know, I have like a true learn at your own pace course. It's like $37 a month, but I'm just constantly uploading content on there. Like,
Sweet. Yeah,
on everything from like how to get started in real estate. If I find a good article about something that I feel like a beginner should know, instead of them sifting through 5,000 articles,
right.
I got all the good stuff there for them. I do like vlogs every now and then, just like a day in the life of what I'm doing.
Right, right.
Whether it's wholesaling or flipping or the new construction development. So yeah, it's a platform so people can just actually learn at their own pace about real estate.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
All right. Tell us about a time, just tell us about a time where it's, you know, it was easy for you to just give it all up. You know, like you were going, you learned, you've been doing real estate for how long now?
Since 2008. So 12 and a half years.
12 and a half. That's a long time.
Yeah.
I know it's not all pretty, right? Enlighten us on some of the lows, lessons, or woes of the journey and how you overcame it.
I would say one of the biggest lessons I learned is the transition from, I'm going from fix and flip to try to start developing. Because there's a good bit of us that flip houses. There's a good bit of us that have rental properties.
Right.
But there's very few that actually do development. You know, and so for me, I spent 2 years and lost about $45,000 trying to figure out how to transition from doing the fix and flip to the development. Because, I mean, when I realized I wanted to focus on revitalizing the communities,
mm-hmm.
I stopped flipping. And I was like, I'm going to sell my rental properties, too, because I want to be in a position to where when everything hits, I won't have any debt on my balance sheets. You know, and I'll be able to fully focus on this new construction project. But I underestimated how hard that process was.
Man.
And the biggest mistake I made, it's going to sound crazy. the biggest mistake I made was surrounding myself with people that were just like me, that thought just like me, that were aspiring to do the same thing. Here's the missing part. I did not include anybody that had actually done it.
Ooh. All right, now we're getting into it. All right.
So I spent almost 2 years like with a bunch of people like hunger, eager, networking, out trying to get it done, but nobody could take the project across the finish line because it was just these little bitty things that we needed to tweak that we didn't know. And everybody was looking to me. I was funding it. I was carrying it. And yeah, at one point, the block that I had first bought, when I bought it in 2013, they had a grocery store on it, like five old houses. So it started off as full of drugs and prostitution. So I cleaned it up, and then I was housing felons, giving them single room occupancy, nonviolent felons, you know, and just giving them a second chance at life. That program went really well.
Nice.
So in 2008, when I saw redevelopment starting in the neighborhood, I took my property manager that was managing that for me, and I created a company, a business owner out of her. I gave her that whole program because I didn't want to just discard the people.
You know what I mean?
So I helped her find a property that we could own or finance. I gave her the down payment as a bonus, and then she took over the program.
That's awesome, bro. I got to rewind because I can't just talk over certain stuff. First of all, if I would have lost $45,000 doing anything, I probably would have tapped
out. I was about to get back to that. So I actually was more than that. Well, it was $45,000 that I lost clear, but I spent another $60,000 demolishing that whole block, tearing down the grocery store and the old houses, getting ready for the new project. And from there, I have no revenue coming in. I'm sinking money into trying to get plans and all this other kind of stuff done, paying these consultants, you know. And yeah, it never got off the ground. In that process, 23 different banks told me no when I finally got my plan together for the project. That's a point anybody should have walked.
Yeah, no.
Anybody with common sense.
How did you deal with that? How did you, you know, like know so many times? You know, I know in sales, I don't know if you've ever done sales. I've done sales. Yeah. They teach you to look for the no. Like, I'm searching for no.
Yeah.
And, you know, how did that affect you? And how did you overcome that?
It was pretty overwhelming, but it's one of the things where it's like, if you turn back now, all this stress was for nothing. You know, all these years of working to try to get it done was for nothing. So it's either keep going or admit failure, you know, complete failure. Yeah.
That's good. Okay.
I take it back. Admit losing, because failure is just lessons and feedback on what you can do to change. You don't lose until you stop.
Say that again, failure.
Failure is just lessons. It just shows you what mistakes you made and tells you what not to do the next time.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But when you stop, that's when you lose.
Okay. So we got to... There's a lot. All right. So let's talk about, first of all, I think you said something that made me think of the quote... if you're the smartest person in your circle, you need to get a new circle.
Precisely.
And I think that's powerful because so many people downplay the idea of mentorship or finding somebody who's already done what you're trying to do.
Right.
Just as simple as that.
Yeah.
And I did that for the longest. Just kept running and running and running and trying to figure out, you know, you with your homies, you with your friends, and y'all all want it, or at least ideally you think you want it.
Yeah.
And y'all gassing each other up, but nobody really knows what to do.
Exactly.
So how did you get out of that situation first? Like, what did you do to shift that circle?
I had the eye-opening moment one day that I needed to focus on finding somebody that had actually done it. And I started thinking about what it would cost to pay somebody to help me versus how much money I had lost. And so at that point, I realized I got to find somebody that can help me.
Somebody can actually help you.
Yeah.
Know what they're doing.
Yeah. So, when I realized I needed to pay somebody, I also had another epiphany. I realized the reason why I was thinking like that is because school conditioned us like that. The education system teaches you if you are wrong more than 10% of the time, you are not the best.
Mm-hmm.
And if you copy off of somebody else, you are not the best. And if you do not come up with something on your own and you don't originally come up with the whole concept and produce it yourself, you are not the best. In reality, in business, it's the complete opposite.
Yeah.
You gotta copy the right cat.
That's interesting.
That's it.
In life, though.
In life.
And like they talk, man, I watched, I can't remember. It talked about like the people who are really successful, they studied somebody.
Right.
They really studied. Either they went and became an apprentice, they found somebody that glued themselves to them, or sometimes it can even happen where they never got in the same room with that person, but they studied them so hard, copied their move, and those people go on to be success, i.e. Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So now that's interesting.
Yeah. So for me, man, at that point, it was like, let me reset. Let me do it the right way this time. Because you there's only two ways you're going to learn, right? You're either going to pay somebody for the knowledge, or you're going to learn with your time, your energy, your effort, and your money, mm-hmm. trying to figure it out.
Your resources.
Right? All yeah. your resources, right? And your stress level. Yeah. And your peace of mind. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So when you really put all that on the table, it just makes so much sense, man, to pay for the knowledge, you know?
That's interesting. And so now you decide to pay for knowledge. What about people, and I'll just throw this curveball at you, the people uh-huh. who just... they don't have the money to pay for the resources.
Yeah.
Do you see any other way that they should be, or any other steps that they should be taking right now? And I'm talking in any industry, not necessarily just real estate.
Yeah, no. Payment doesn't even have to be monetary. It could be time, it could be energy, it could be effort. Mm-hmm. It could be a connection. You know, you just have to figure out what value you can bring to that person.
There we go. That's what I was trying to get
value,
to. Yeah.
Value. Yeah, yeah. I mean, but before we had a currency, everything was a barter system. You mm-hmm. traded something for something. Mm-hmm. So you bring something of value, make it a win-win for that person.
Absolutely.
Yeah, then it's possible that you can get the knowledge out of them.
Yeah, I forgot where I learned it at, but I learned that really quickly. Yeah. When I'm in a room with someone who's mm-hmm. successful, mm-hmm. I'm paying attention to, yeah. okay, I can add value right here. Boom. Right. And then now, instead of trying to stick out and, look, it's like, let me add value while everybody's looking for, has a handout.
Exactly.
Let me go in my wallet and pay for X, Y, and Z.
Exactly.
And that's what they remember. You know what I mean? And so now it's like, oh, okay, you looked out for me. You know what I mean? I got a homie like this. Anytime I'm doing events or just like hosting anything, he's always like, what you need? What you need? What you need? What you need? The whole time.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, bro, I need you around every time.
Right.
No matter what it costs, no matter what you're doing, I need you around every time because he's constantly adding value to me mm-hmm. at that point. So mm-hmm. now, okay, the goal is to buy a total block and fifth ward, just to make sure I'm clear.
Yeah, well, I bought a total block and fifth ward.
Okay,
the block that had the grocery store on it, it was the whole block.
And
this was before that was a trend, before anybody was even using that terminology.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. So what do you see moving forward? I know you talked about Black Wall Street, you know, mm-hmm. what happened to Oklahoma. Can you kind of, I don't know if you want to reveal plans, but mm-hmm. what do people have to look forward to, especially some of the people that are invested in this? Yeah. And I hope to get more through this interview to get more people invested in it.
Yeah. I mean, the goal is to continue to expand and create a blueprint that can be duplicated in every city, right? Now, like I said, the important parts are making sure that some type of redevelopment is already starting in that neighborhood. So it's going to be gentrified anyway. So we go in and we control as much of the narrative as we can around the big gentrification, okay? So that's a way for us to be able to go in and protect existing residents, because you can go in and buy rental properties and not have to raise the rents immediately. Mm-hmm. As real estate investors are taught, go in, make it nicer, raise the rent as high as you can to get the biggest return. But they don't talk about how you're displacing those tenants that have fixed incomes and have nowhere else to go, right? So with this model, since it's going to be gentrified anyway, the property values are going to go up.
Right.
So that's where you get your big return on your investment. You don't have to worry about the cash flow as much. As long as it can carry itself or you can make some good money, then that's a different model that we can use in our own communities. And by us crowdfunding to do that, we can control bigger components of the whole community when they're being gentrified.
Bro, how did you learn? Like, how did you come to this?
Bro, just frustration. I think just thinking, you know how you just bump your head against the wall for a while?
Enough times.
Until something just clicks. Yeah. It's like, yeah, that's it. That's
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
And so, but you know, the other part of it, like I said earlier, is that first project where I had the grocery store, that was the new construction. That was me bringing the higher incomes back. Mm-hmm. And so people kept asking me, but what about the people that are there? You're displacing people by building this high value stuff. And I'm like, well, no, I'm not, because I didn't displace anybody. This property wasn't inhabited by people mm-hmm. that were long-term residents. It was a rundown grocery store, prostitution, drugs. And they're like, okay, still, but how do you protect the existing residents? So I knew that I needed to set the example for that. And so that's how the Blatter Block project came about. It was like, okay, this is the perfect way for me to show them how we do both. How we bring the higher incomes back and we protect the existing residents.
I love it. All right, let's bring it all the way down to kindergarten just for the person. First, let's do this. Talk about why you think every person should have some knowledge of real estate. I'm talking about from the person who have no clue right now.
Okay. Real estate is literally the oldest business in the world. When you look at kingdoms, the only reason the king was so wealthy is because he controlled all of the land and he collected tariffs from everybody. The lords were tax collectors. They collected pence from everybody and brought it back to the king. That has not changed. The city government right now is funded by property taxes. The state government is funded by taxes. The federal government is funded by taxes. All that's tied to real estate.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't realize that, if you don't realize that you need water, you need food, and you need shelter, everybody has to live somewhere, and somebody's going to own that.
Yep.
Every business is housed somewhere, and somebody owns that building. So if we are not involved in that, we are missing the boat.
Yeah. You know what I mean? We still picking up crumbs, basically.
We're picking up crumbs. Like, we're picking up crumbs.
And
if you think about any business that's anywhere, their first business partner is their landlord.
Because mm-hmm.
you got to pay that rent first.
Absolutely.
You go on Westheimer, you're paying $10,000, $12,000 a month in rent. That's your business partner. And he got his hand out first.
That's crazy. And so, and I always hear people in real estate talking about they're not making any more land.
You're right.
So it's like you need to get into it. People are going to have to buy it. You're going to have to have brick and mortar. It's a thing. Yeah. It's a necessity.
Yeah. Right? And the beautiful thing about real estate is it could become passive. It's not you have to go get another degree and go trade your time for dollars.
Right.
You make a decision one time, you put some money into something, and it can continue to generate revenue for you month after month. While whether you choose to work or you don't work, it's generating revenue for you on the side. So it's not like you have to be an entrepreneur and go start a business, but you should invest.
How do you see real estate for, and I'm going to just section it off to people of color right now, helping us in this current crisis, this current landscape of the world that we're in right now, given, you know, George Floyd and all the police brutality and white people waking up to some white people waking up to say, wow, I didn't know all this was going on.
Mm-hmm.
What role does real estate play in that?
I feel like real estate plays a role in a way to create more economic power within the community. Okay. Because when you control the real estate and you have that additional revenue and you have that net worth value increase in every household, then that gives us more opportunity to do more things in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you have a house in a neighborhood and the value is going up $100,000 and you want to start a business, you can go borrow against the equity in that house. Right. And that business can then employ people in the community. And now you're an entrepreneur, you own that business. Now you're building wealth.
Yeah.
You know, now you can go take that money that you get from being more well off financially, and we can do something that we really don't do.
Yeah.
We can form lobbies, and we can have lobbyists that go to Washington. We stop at voting, right?
Yeah.
But the day after somebody gets elected in office, or the day they're out of office, there's a lobbyist in front of them every day pushing an agenda.
Yep.
You got to have money to do that.
Absolutely.
We got to have that. Number two, if we have more money in our communities, we can fund our own police academies. We can fund policing to put more people like us in the community to get them hired on the force. We can control more of the politics in the community. There's so many things we can do besides just trying to force somebody to make a decision, but without bringing anything to the table.
Right. Just, you know, obviously we bring our vote, but like you said, we can bring more than
the vote only gets you so far.
Right. But we first have to get ourselves to economic power.
Right.
As a group, as a collective.
Right.
And again, it's not to say bash any other race. It's just empower our race.
I almost feel like some of them will look at us in a different light because a lot of them don't understand why we spend so much time trying to be accepted.
Uh-huh.
They come here and they know that that same KKK group does not like them as a minority either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they don't focus on that. We focus on that way more than anybody else does.
Interesting.
And a lot of them don't understand that. They're like, why do you spend so much time trying to convince them to accept you when look at us? We come from a country where we're killing each other. And we come here to escape, and we do just as good.
Yeah.
Another thing that we don't realize is we look at, I guess the Mexicans are the closest to us, right? Mm-hmm. They're right there in Mexico. We look at the ones here that have the contractors and all that kind of stuff. We look at them poorly, but there's more of them in the Woodlands now than us.
Oh, yeah.
But what we don't realize is we look at them like they got it better than us or something. But what you realize, the ones that are here, that's a 10% that took a big risk.
Mm-hmm.
And just like we got lazy cousins in our houses right now, in the projects right now, they got lazy cousins in way worse condition back in Mexico.
Right.
Calling them, asking for a check.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we think our situations are so different, but they really aren't.
No, I totally understand. I mean, I can agree with that. It's the same thing. You know, I'm first generation Nigerian, and it's the same thing. I won't say they're lazy back home, but a lot of people look at what Nigerians are doing here.
Yeah.
And just the whole African diaspora.
Yeah.
Because they come in, they work and they grind,
mm-hmm.
but it's a lot of people they take care of back home.
Right.
You know what I mean? That purpose is behind them driving that mission.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, so real estate, and I'm glad you're able to help us to understand how real estate can be a tool to be able to get over.
And let me touch on one more point. Another excuse we always give about the minorities, the other minorities from other countries that work in our communities. We're like, oh, they came here with money. I don't know about you, but if I came here with $1 million in the bank, I would not set my family up in the middle of the hood where I got to have bulletproof glass, burglar bars, where people getting shot, getting stabbed outside. I would not bring my family there if I came here wealthy. That's a complete false narrative.
No, I think I don't want to misspeak on any certain cultures, but I know some of them, they don't come here with an abundance of money. What they do is they put money together and they give them a send off.
Exactly.
And
then
it's like that little that you have, they go to America and invest it wisely.
Right.
Real estate, gas stations, nail salons.
Or they'll work their way up through the system. And then one will be chosen to go and actually start their own location, but it has to be the exact business that everybody already knows. Mm-hmm. That's why you see them all in the same industry. You don't see somebody coming from a nail salon going to open a gas station. Mm-hmm. They're like, we're going to teach you this, but 10 or 12 of us, we're going to put this money together and we're going to help you fund your first one. You know,
that's
beautiful. But it's got to be in the same industry, and we could do the same things.
Right.
We could do the same things.
No, I mean, you're doing it. Like seriously, like you're helping us see, like I felt good when I bought those shares.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I read it and I understood it, but I was like, you know what? It doesn't matter. Even if I didn't, if I'm a person who couldn't quite grasp it like I did.
Yeah.
I felt like I was being empowered by doing so.
Yeah.
And so to give people that just alone, but then to take it a step further and say, hey, when the property value goes up, when this builds up, my equity or my shares are growing up, you know what I mean? And I have a few stocks here and there and then I play around. I'm learning. I'm trying to get into Forex. You mess with Forex at all?
A little bit.
Options
and Forex.
Yeah, my homeboy does Forex, but I'm still like heavy in the stock market. So I totally understand what it means to put your money in something, watch it grow, and be able to step back from it. Mm-hmm. And this, I think Warren Buffett says you need to disassociate yourself from it. Like if you're going to invest, be able to pull back from it and don't be emotional about it.
Just let it grow.
And let it grow. So it will take time, but it's something that I absolutely see happening. Because there's a lot of beautiful homes in Fifth Ward now.
Bro, it's changing extremely rapidly.
What do you say to white people right now who are asking, what can we do to help?
Support. I mean, invest in the businesses, help them grow faster. I mean, that's another thing that we have to realize. We have to be willing to take outside money in the community to help it grow faster. What happens now is the dollar leaves our community within 6 hours. And our first focal point was to say, well, let's keep the money within, but let's only work with us. All black everything. No, we need to reverse the trend. If the dollar is going out in 6 hours, need to try to get dollars coming in from outside our community in 6 hours and keeping them in the community and circulating.
Absolutely.
So if they want to support, they can help fund initiatives. They can do the things that we haven't gotten in the past with the loans and all that kind of stuff. You know, they can support our businesses.
Absolutely.
You know? They can give us guidance on how to run the businesses better since they have the experience on that. You know.
Absolutely.
I mean, in several ways, they can talk to their constituents, the people that don't really understand. They can be advocates for us. I think one of the things I talked about earlier with the lobbyists, we probably do need some white lobbyists that can identify with the white people more, you know, to help push our narrative. I mean, I think those are several ways that they really can contribute to the cause in a positive way.
Man, okay. So this is heavy. It's a lot of good information, and I'm happy we're able to have it here. I always like to know, and the people want to know, right? I do a little segment like the people want to know. What are some resources, right? And I'll do it a little different now because you're giving so much game. What are some resources that you suggest to people to just go check out? Obviously, you have Learn From Chris. Where can they find that at?
Learnfromchris.com, literally.
Okay. Yeah. And then outside of that, where would you have people start? You know, you just say, man, listen, I want to know more about real estate or not even just real estate, how to use my money wisely. I work up 9 to 5 and I want to know what to do with my check.
Yeah. I would say the number one resource that changed my life and changed a lot of people's life. If you haven't read the book Rich Dad Poor Dad, that's a cornerstone in changing your mindset on everything.
That's Robert Kiyosaki.
Yeah. The storyline is his dad had all the degrees, had, you know, the high paying jobs and died broke. And his friend's dad had 8th grade education, left $1 million business to his family. Mm. You know, and it the principles that are taught in that book, that's way more important than you studying any technical trade, because it's a mindset that transcends any industry you go to. You know, any form of investment, any form of entrepreneurship, it applies there. That's the best start that I can suggest to anybody.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. And then, are you teaching your son real estate right now?
Read Rich Dad Poor Dad when he's 13.
How old is he now?
He'll be 21 in December.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's the other part of the story. So I was a teenage dad. Now he is a sophomore at University of Houston on full academic scholarship.
Beautiful.
Yeah, going out for entrepreneurship and finance. Nice. 5-year MBA program.
He's at Bauer School of Business. Yeah. So he's taking after you a lot. Like,
yeah, I mean, he's doing his own thing. I don't know that he's specifically going to do real estate, but I want to give him the platform to be able to do whatever he wants.
Yeah, man.
And that's something else that I feel like we do too much. We feel like whatever, especially in our culture, we feel like whatever we're building up, we have to hand it off to our kids to take over. A lot of times our kids don't want to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So your goal should be to build it up to where you can hire a CEO to run that company.
Yeah.
And let the kids own the company, but they can be hands off and pursue whatever they want to do in life.
Something else.
Yeah. So that's my goal with him.
Man, that's game, bro.
Yeah.
You're kicking game right now. Okay. Man, anything, any other projects or any other, you know, just advice you have for people? I always want to know, you know, the greatest piece of advice you've gotten on your journey or that you just like to give people.
Man, I would say number one, network and get in the rooms with the people you want to be around.
Yeah.
Make sure you're always in a position to bring some type of value to people, because the most important thing, and no matter what you want to do, is finding mentorship, finding somebody that's already doing it to shorten your learning curve. And I mean, I there's nothing more important than that. I mean, spending time reading all the books in the world does not overshadow the importance of actually getting out and being under somebody that's actually doing it.
Theory is one thing, but
applied science is a whole different animal.
Yeah, you got to get out there and do it.
A whole different animal.
And so, and you host events. I was fortunate to host one of your events, Entrepreneurship 101. And I can already kind of guess, but you know, what's your goal with hosting these events, and what do you get from it? Obviously creating your own network, right? Like, instead of, sometimes we can't find networking events to go to, but you bring it to you.
Yeah.
Speak more about these events you're creating and what you hope to accomplish with those.
So for me, like I said, when I hit that epiphany coming out of college and the first year in the workforce, and you know, working in corporate America, and I realized I just didn't know where to start. I didn't know anything about business. I thought people that went to school for business just worked at banks. I literally didn't know anything, bro. But so to start from there and be where I am now, it's like, man, I wonder how much faster I would have got there if I had somebody actually showing me the ropes or giving me the game.
Right, right.
And so that's the whole purpose of my entrepreneurship when I host seminars.
Yeah.
It's not about real estate. You know, the panel we were on, I had people in several different industries.
Yeah, no, that was a beautiful panel,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, and I want to continue to do that to show, especially to show the audience that there's representation of us in all different fields, even though we may not see them on mainstream. They don't have big social media accounts and not influencers.
Absolutely.
They're actually building their businesses.
Man, I know a lot of them in Houston.
Yeah.
It's been blowing my mind.
Yeah.
I'm like, yo, nobody, you know, this person is not on Instagram with 100,000 followers, but they are somewhere with 100,000, you know, like.
Right. The people that are famous on Instagram in the same industry, they want this person that's not on social media is running circles around
exactly
them. Yeah,
exactly. So and I think that's a point right there, just for millennials to stop thinking that only people on social media are the successful people.
That's cap.
Yeah.
Well, majority of it is cap.
All cap. You know what I'm saying? So you probably can't get 1,000,000 likes, but there's some people out there not to make $1,000,000. So find those people in your
precisely
city.
Precisely, bro.
Man, listen, I'm good, bro. Like, you've given us so much. I'm just trying to digest it all myself, man. Anything else that you want to tell the people or just give to people?
Man, I would say that's it, bro. I think the most important thing, man, follow my most active social media, which is my Instagram account. It's _INVSTR. So it's _investor. Follow me on there. That's where I'm most fluent. That's where I'm most accessible. And I have a YouTube channel too. Just look up my name, Chris Senegal. But there's going to be a ton more information. Hopefully, we can do one of these in the future.
Yeah, we're going to have to do another one. Yeah. Like, this is the launch. This is episode 4.
Yeah.
I plan on, once I get to a certain point, you know, bringing certain guests back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yo, Chris, man, I appreciate you once again for stepping into the Transformation Chamber with me, bro. You're always welcome anytime. Hopefully, I'll have you again in the future. Thanks again for letting us crash your spot.
Yes, sir.
Yo, and to the audience, and I appreciate y'all for listening. And until next time, peace. Thanks again for tuning in to the Transformation Chamber. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. To find out more about Chris Senegal, follow him on Instagram @_investor. That's @_INVSTR. Or visit his website at learnfromchris.com. To find out more about the Transformation Chamber, follow me at joshuatdada. Or visit my website at joshuatdada.com. See you soon.